this is Leon Bortler interviewing Chevis Walling in Washington, D.C. on September 12, 1979. Professor Walling is currently Distinguished Professor of Chemistry at the University of Utah and is also editor of the Journal of the American Chemical Society. I know you were born in Evanston, Illinois in 1916, but I know almost nothing else about your family. And so if I could ask you, whatever part of your family you want to start with, you have brothers and sisters. And
I have a sister and two brothers. My two brothers are not dead. I was the youngest of four.
Okay. Can you give me their names? And so just for the
Willoughby Haskell Walling and William English Walling III, two brothers. Sister's name was Frederica Christina.
Your father. Can you tell me a little bit about his education, what he did?
He was a graduate of the University of Chicago.
I think I got that part on. He was a graduate of the University of Chicago.
He was a graduate of the University of Chicago. He went briefly to Harvard Law School, but never took a degree. He was a banker in Chicago, really. He was also quite active in civic and philanthropic affairs.
I think you best give me his name too before we do it.
Willoughby George Walling.
Okay.
His brother, his name is William English Walling, was a prominent early socialist.
Okay. An interesting fact that won't be found anywhere else.
Quite well known. He wrote quite a lot.
Okay. Are there any particular ways in which your father might have influenced you in what you...
Well, certainly not particularly with an interest in science. There had been a good many doctors, MDs, in the family. And I think either he or my mother would have been pleased had I gone into medicine, which I had never very seriously contemplated. My mother came from South Carolina. My father was a judge, and he was a South Carolina politics. Mm-hmm. I think fought in the Civil War. He was surrendered to Confederate cavalry at Appomattox. Was the last thing.
A claim to fame. Your mother's name, just for the record.
Frederica Christina Haskell. I'm one of the few chemists in the profession who actually came from fairly well-to-do family.
That's not all that true. but it's sort of a mixed bag. Yeah. Of the people I've interviewed, it's sort of been a mixed thing. But it is interesting that a good number have come from people who were not wanting, at any rate. I think. And so they could at least provide for them in terms of their education.
They had to be well enough off to get an education.
To get an education. Yeah. And of course, the ones I've talked to have gone to places like Harvard and the better private schools. And so
They tend to come from families that are sort of on the way up and believe in education.
Yes. Okay. So your family was relatively well educated before that.
Yeah.
Do you remember, you then grew up in Evanston?
I grew up in Winnetka.
In Winnetka,
yeah.
Okay. And can you remember something of what it was like in terms of, what one did in Winnetka, and what about your schooling and particularly influential teachers?
I started out in the public schools, and after Winnetka has a very good public school system. Up in fifth grade, I started going to private school, North Shore Country Day, which is another good high school or college preparatory school. Went there for the rest of my time. I would say that I was interested in science ever since I learned how to read, but it wasn't until I was in about fifth grade and learned how to make gunpowder that chemistry was science, but you could actually do something. I really stuck with it ever since. So mm-hmm. I really knew I wanted to do this very, very early in my career. Mm-hmm. Didn't really get a great deal of intensive or very good science education in before I got to college. There was some rather good sort of introduction to it. Astronomy and things like this in elementary school, but the only science, real science course I took in high school was physics. I never had any chemistry in high school. I taught it to myself and, mm-hmm. talked myself into the course at Harvard, which assumed you had high school chemistry, which really just meant you had to balance equations.
Yeah. Yeah. But you'd, it's interesting that you'd manage to learn all that on yourself. Anyone that aside from your own interest, anyone that sort of took an interest in your interest in science or in chemistry at that level and fostered your interest?
Not that really had much of an effect on me. The school was sympathetic, but mm-hmm. didn't do much more than that.
So because of your family's financial position, you certainly didn't feel you missed any experiences as a result of being anyway. I assume because of the education in your family that you expected to go to college from an early age.
Yeah.
Did you consider other institutions besides Harvard?
Not very seriously. I had an older brother. Well, my older brother, one of them started in Harvard, although he only lasted about the mid-years. He was not much of a scholar. He had a very good time, but he was there. Most of my friends went east to college. Actually, as I remember, out of about 14 boys in the senior class, about six of them went to Harvard.
Uh-huh.
Those days it was easy.
Yeah.
You had $400 tuition and did all right on the college boards, you got in.
I suppose being a Midwesterner helped too. They were trying to distribute. Can you tell me something about life as an undergraduate at Harvard? You went there when? About
1933. Yeah. Well, I roomed with one of my high school classmates, who also was a chemistry major, so we sort of had that to keep us interested. The advisor to my freshman year at Henry Bent Sr. Was that at Harvard? My advisor, he was. Mm-hmm. Physical chemist from another different field, and I really fascinated him by telling him how we'd arranged a Model A Ford so you could spray stannic chloride into the exhaust pipe. That this may such an effective smoke screen. We only did this experiment once. I mean, we always had a certain number of extracurricular chemical projects going on. And but then I persuaded Louis Feaser, who was then teaching the advanced, or the one semester freshman general chemistry for people who had high school chemistry, that I could take that course, and then I had him in organic, and he had quite an effect, because he really gave the students the feel that here was an interesting and exciting subject. He was a very effective teacher in making the subject look interesting and looking for something he enjoyed immensely.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine you've heard this from many other people.
I've heard that from others. This is a little bit later on, but I noticed you had a couple of publications around 1935 with a fellow named
Harold
Fisher.
Yeah, yeah.
And somehow I've missed him in looking through the
camera. How did that happen? He was instructor at Harvard at that point. He was in charge of the undergraduate lab.
Mm-hmm.
Or he was one of the he had his PhD, he was an instructor. And they would let some of the better students in the organic course, do some independent research rather than the regular laboratory. He sort of took me under his wing and did some things with him. How that happened.
I see. And he, obviously, he didn't stay on very long.
He didn't stay on. He's at the meeting now. He went to the Department of Agriculture.
I see.
And I think he had quite a successful career. He was in charge of one of their laboratories for a long time.
What about other courses at Harvard at the time that may have influenced you, either in science or outside of science?
Well, I was certainly taken by organic chemistry very early, partly through reading, which I had a marvelous book named Creative Chemistry, written by E. Slosson.
That's interesting.
Which came out after World War I.
In the 20s, that's right. Paul Bartlett mentioned the same book.
And I read that as a kid, and I was very impressed by that. And from that, I think I learned how to draw structural formulas and discovered that isomers existed, because there was more than two ways of drawing some of these things. The science books I read were that, and then I also read Eddington and Jeans rather extensively when I was in high school. But coming back to Harvard, the advanced organic course with E.P. Kohler, which paid some attention to reaction mechanisms, I found a very inspirational kind of a course.
Yeah, how did you find Kohler?
Well, Krusty, I also did some independent research in that one with, although it never led to anything that got published, I don't remember the name of the man with the head of the laboratory there. Tischler. Max Tischler was. He was also a friend of Hap Fisher, so I got to know him quite well when I was a sophomore. So these people all had some effect on me. Because Bartlett was a graduate student when I was an undergraduate. I don't know when
He finished off in about 1930. Did not return until about 1934. He was at Minnesota when you first started.
Well, I know. I didn't really. Well, I guess I'd met him when he'd come back to the staff, but I never got to know him while I was an undergraduate.
He was just fresh to the staff.
Physical chemistry, I found less rewarding, but it was something of a challenge to figure out. And quantitative analysis I regarded as a good test of whether I was serious about chemistry. I wanted to put up with that. I was.
You already taught us.
G.P. Baxter taught the.
Okay, and was Kistikowski teaching? Or someone else? Or
Bennett.
That's right.
Was still teaching chemistry when I think it was junior.
You weren't treated to Forbes then?
No. The other, well, those are the major ones one took. Took a course in industrial chemistry with, I don't remember the name of the old gentleman who taught that, but that
battery,
what?
I know who it is. Okay.
It was rather interesting, and it actually seen some, the plant trips was the interesting part of that. I took a course.
Funny, Willie Hanna mentioned the same course, and he'd only taken it 20 years before you had.
And I took a biochemistry course. I guess Henderson was in charge of it, but they had something of a variety of lectures.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of the textbooks that you used during that period?
Coleman was the organic text. That's the one I can found. Hammett's solution of electrolytes was turned up in qualitative analysis. Those are the only ones I can remember.
Um, mentioned that that Kohler's course was at least oriented a little toward mechanisms.
At least to the point of figuring out what the intermediates were in chemical reactions.
I'm trying to develop that because apparently he had an influence on a number of people.
There was a good deal of stereochemistry in it, and there was a good deal of questions like 1,2 versus 1,4 addition, these kind of problems. Why do you observe one thing in one case and another in another?
You had decided to become a chemist rather early in life.
Yeah.
What were your perceptions of being a chemist at that particular time, when you were in college? What do you think chemists did? what could you see?
I hoped I would teach. I hoped I'd be able to get a teaching position, but they were rather fuzzy, and I was good many people tried to discourage me and told me that chemists did work analysis in the back end of large factories. I think it was probably true for a good many of them. I didn't really have a very clear idea of what they did. I thought I wanted, if I could find a way of doing this, I wanted to do it.
Okay. Well, you didn't feel embarrassed by that. I haven't talked to a person yet who really had a clear idea of what it was like. Do you have any friends from undergraduate days that you remember? Any that became chemists or went on to graduate school that you remember well?
Paul Cohen was the only classmate of mine who, I think, has gone on to a very notable chemistry career. There are people I've seen occasionally, Ned Riddle and another fellow both went to Rome and Haas. I think they both went to Illinois and got their PhDs. Probably Morris Zipf, who is now inorganic companies, but had an interesting paper in Chemtech recently about producing extraordinarily pure things they need to make optical glasses. But there weren't many my classmates who went on into chemistry. There are, as now, a good many chemistry majors who went on into medicine.
When did you decide to go to graduate school?
Well, I thought I wanted to if I were doing well. Because obviously, if I was going to teach, I need to.
And how did you make a choice of which graduate school to go to?
My father was a great promoter of Chicago, so I inquired around and found that Chicago had a perfectly good graduate school. And I thought it might be nice to go down home, near home. So. I was offered a fellowship at Harvard, but
You were offered a fellowship at Harvard.
But so I called my father and said, "Do you want to support me at Chicago or should I take a fellowship?" He said he'd be glad to support me at Chicago.
Well, that's very generous of you.
Only cost $300.
Different than today. Chicago must have been a pretty exciting place for a young chemist at that point. Can you tell me something about it and your experiences there?
It was somewhat mixed. I talked to Max Tischler, and then he said he thought the most interesting work there was being done by Karas, so I spent my senior year. I was home on vacation. I visited the chemistry department and talked to him. The procedure was pretty simple in those days because all I did then was to turn up at registration and pay my tuition and say I wanted to go to graduate school. Bringing my diploma with me, I think. I think at that point they wrote Harvard to find out.
I see. Well, they didn't even have to apply for admission at Vance or
No, so that wasn't applying for teaching us.
I see.
Fellowship.
That's interesting.
Of which there weren't very many. So Kailash was sort of pre-selected for me as the most likely person to work with. At that point, he was certainly the prominent organic chemist there.
Mm-hmm. Again, that seems to be a fairly common occurrence where people will go to a graduate school, people will advise in advance. So.
Well, Frank Westheimer was there, but he was just starting.
Yes.
And Whelan was there, but he was more of a, he was much more theoretical. In fact, he was just almost, he might have been there a year, but he started about the same time I
did. He'd just come off the work with Pauling, I guess, and so he was really very theoretical.
So, I remember I talked my way out of taking practically all courses for, I took almost no courses for credit because Chicago had a very flexible system. But I, sat in on Kailash's courses, and I took thermodynamics, and I took Whelan's course, and I took, I sat in on a good many others.
Who was teaching the thermal course at that time?
T.F. Young. Lewis and Randall thermodynamics.
20 years later, I took the course with T.F. Young. Part of it, anyway.
Yeah.
Do you remember who was chairman at Chicago at that point?
Schlesinger, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And what was, George Whelan was teaching what?
Well, he was teaching a course in theoretical or organic chemistry and the application of resonance theory to organic, which got a somewhat mixed reaction, I think, from students because there seemed to be an awful lot of ad hoc explanations.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very qualitative kind of a treatment. It was essentially the combination of Pauling and the British electronic theory of chemistry, moving electrons around.
Mm-hmm. And did you sit on Westheimer's course? Did he teach a course at that particular
point? He taught a course in chemical kinetics that I sat in on,
I remember his
quite a good one.
Mentioning a course that he taught where the students were so sharp that he was, it must have been one of his very early courses, I guess it was, and I don't know if H.C. Brown and you and there were a group of other people who were really sort of formidable.
H.C. Brown was there at the same time. Now, he accused me of going to sleep in his class, but I explained that was on the car he had it at 3 p.m, not that I didn't know. So. A very interesting class.
You took only 2 years to complete your PhD. How did you manage that?
I was able to start doing research right away.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I really, well, I or 2 summers, I guess, in the course of that too, and I started doing research right away, and so this saved me a year. I was able to pass their comprehensive examinations, whatever they were called, and in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Since I wasn't taking as many courses for credit, I spent my time doing research.
I see. Can you describe the sort of the tenor of the Kailash group? How was it run? Did you see Kailash very often?
Well, I had Frank Mayo at that point. It was sort of, he always had a lieutenant who sort of looked out for his research group.
Mm-hmm.
And so that most of your day-to-day dealings were with Frank Mayo, who got to be a really good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he did have a seminar every other week or something like that in the evening. And students would report on things, we would discuss things. And he was usually there for that. But otherwise, you saw him when you were something important or something, or serious troubles or something.
I see.
Well, so he didn't have remarkably good students. There were a few good ones there, but there weren't. Most of them were more or less filling in pieces of projects that he'd laid out. He was almost all of the research at that point was on the peroxide effect,
mm-hmm.
mostly with hydrogen bromide, but in part looking for other reactions, did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And each student looked at a different piece of it.
Yeah. Okay. What about, well, did you have any feelings about Karash's accounts at that particular time? How did you feel his comprehension of the problems he was working on was? That is,
well, I guess at that point I felt he knew much more than I did. I think later I got to know him quite well. Students tended to be sort of scared of him, although I don't think I was. And they knew what he was trying to establish. It was still being worked out because the explanation of the peroxide effect in terms of a bromine atom chain reaction, I think, was worked out about the time I got there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know it was published while I was mm-hmm. there. And then he was going to write a review of this, and he asked me if I was, he and Frank and I were going to write this, and then Karash decided he didn't have time to work on it, so Frank and I wrote the review.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm sure he looked it over to make sure it agreed with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in fact, there was some place where I heard a rumor that his name was on the original review, and somebody objected to that. I don't know why someone would have.
His name was going to be in the original review, but he didn't tell me this. But Frank said that he decided he wanted to take it off and just leave it with us.
I see.
That was the story I heard.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't contradictory to his views, I don't think. I think we put in some things which he may not have thought of.
Mm-hmm. So you had started the review before you left Chicago?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess it came out in 1940.
It
must have been.
Yeah, I wrote the first draft of it, and Frank and I had gone over it quite extensively before I left.
Mm-hmm.
At least I wrote the first draft of most of it, and then there was some minor.
That's quite an undertaking for a student. You've only been a graduate student for 2 years.
The literature wasn't as big in those days.
James Senior was acknowledged in that Karash paper.
Probably in discussions with Frank. Wheeland was probably acknowledged in it too. I don't.
Remember, he looked it over as well.
He and Frank and I used to eat lunch together occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think the most important new idea in that review was the attempt to show why you observed these reactions with hydrogen bromide but not with the other halogen acids on account of the energetics. I think that was my contribution there.
That was indeed.
It was undoubtedly stimulated by discussions with Wheeler. It might have been his idea too, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's obviously an important idea because it's now entered the undergraduate textbooks.
Yeah.
So
changed the numbers a little bit.
Yes,
altogether.
Yes, right. It only took 25 years to get there. Was Julius Stieglitz still around?
No, he had died. Just before I got there.
I meant to check the date on that. Did you have any feeling at that time that, I don't know who was building that group of essentially physical organic chemists. The fact that I know that Karash had recruited Frank Westheimer. I don't know who brought in Weiland, and the fact that Mayo was an instructor, even though he was Karasha's lieutenant. And what was